We'll get to Dallas here in a second. But there are a lot of stock is put into that U20, that under 20 World Junior Hockey Championships, and really that is only sort of a 2 or 3 week audit of an entire junior player's career. How much stock, with your scouting eye, do you put in that tournament specifically?
You know, I guess the best way to put it, it's another piece of information, but you can't, it's like with any information, there's other information you need to put with it. You know, you can't put a weight system on it and say, well, it's 95% of the guy's career, if he's good or bad there, because there's so many circumstances that come into play. It's a high pressure tournament. It's a one game shot tournament. So is it important? Definitely. There's a lot of information in there, but you got to be smart with the information you get to and kind of balance it out.
Moving over to your team, the Dallas Stars, how much easier is life for you since Tyler Seguin got off to a very good start?
Well, when players play well, good GM usually has good players, and same thing with good coaches, and down the line it goes. But Tyler's came in, he's played very well. I think it's no secret, everybody knows he's a good player. And really the big thing is he's 21 years old, and for some reason he took a lot of heat in Boston, because they seem to have lost the cup, but there's more than just him. He's not the reason they lost the cup and that. So we're just kind of moving on from that. We're fortunate we've got him. And he's come in, he's played very well, he's been everything we wanted, and the nice thing is we know that there's still lots of room for growth there.
He seems to be saying all of the right things. I mean, were these things that you heard upon the trade, the new maturity, the I've kind of found myself thing since coming to Dallas? I mean, I was really impressed with the way he carried himself in Boston, knowing what he was going to face from that media.
No, he handled it very well, and we talked to him before we went to Boston, and we were there to kind of, if he had any questions, but he had it all. He was looking forward to it. He said, look, I want to go there. He loved Boston. They won the cup. They went to the finals 2 out of 3 years. It's the first team that drafts you. That's a big stamp on your heart. So he loves Boston. He loves the people there. He loved the team, but he knows it's time to move on. But he wanted to go there and have closure, and he wanted to say his word. And I thought he handled it just very well and like a professional.
It really was remarkable watching you work in the offseason and specifically shore up what is one of, if not the most crucial pieces outside of the net mining, and that's the center ice position. In a matter of, what was it, Jim, a couple of days, it was Seguin, it was Sean Horkoff, and with the Seguin trade, of course, you got Rich Peverly as well, and then drafted Valeri Nichushkin, who, although he's playing on the right side, I think when all is said and done, he's going to be a middleman as well. When you took over the job, did you look at Dallas and say, right away, I need to do something down the middle?
And I've been scouting, you always evaluate teams. And so even when I was in Detroit, you're evaluating every team. And when I took the job, I knew that there was a weakness there. You mentioned it. You got to have a good goalie. You got to have a good defense. And then the next key piece is you got to be good down the middle. So it was no secret. We sat down with the staff in Dallas and we knew we had to fix that. And, it was fortunate just the timing of things, whether it's the cap or, the other thing is we had some pretty good players to give up on that trade, which kind of helped you. You have to have players that fit the right cap situation and fit the right maturity level of a team. And Louis Erickson was really a big fit for them to kind of make the trade. So we were fortunate that way, but that was a position we knew we had to fill the void.
Let me ask you about the cap for a second since you bring it up. At last count for me, I think there's somewhere around 20 to maybe 22 teams in this league right now that have $2 million or less under the cap. Are the wheels of trades frozen because of this right now, or do we read too much into seeing so many teams pressed up against the cap in the sense that you can move salary if you really want to move it?
No, you're right. It's a big part of it. It's when you talk to teams, the first thing is you talk. It's player for player, but eventually you got to get down to the nitty gritty, and that's when the money part comes into play. And it's tough. If you've got a $3 million player you want to move and the other team's offering a $1 million player, it's probably not going to be a fit. And I think that's why it's very quiet. I think even in this new CBA, it's become you build your team over the summer, and once October, November hits, that's almost your team. And it's hard to make these trades now. It's dollar for dollar, and it's money for money, and it's still player for player, but, you know, the big part is the financial fit.
You know, I suppose the answer to this traditionally has always been Thanksgiving, or as Jim, us Canadians call it, as you well know, U.S. Thanksgiving. At what point do you look at your team and say, yeah, I know what we have here for this season?
Yeah, I think, you know, we always, I'm going back to Detroit again here, we always thought by Thanksgiving, you're either going to be up with the guys with your head swimming above water, you're going to be in, you know, one of those six teams that's probably in the playoffs, or you're going to be one of those teams that's in the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th spot, and you're a little bit in the mud, and you got a battle on your hands. And I think you're right. I think Thanksgiving is kind of that time. It doesn't mean you're out of it, but it means you got a battle ahead of you. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a tough sled in the head. If you get the wrong injuries at the right time, it's going to affect your play. So, that Thanksgiving, that December 1st area, you know, you even look at the games nowadays, every game seems to be 3 points. It doesn't matter who you're playing. And it's hard to make up 6 points if everybody's getting a point every night. So it is a crucial time of the year.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, obviously we're dealing with a different playoff format this year. Do you approach this season or trying to dig out of a hole differently now because you're dealing with a more divisional playoff format than a conference format?
No, I think it's still the same. You know, you're still going to have, you know, the opportunity. If you have more points than somebody on the other side, you can still swing into the playoffs, you know, in within your conference. So the ability's still there. You got to look at it. You still got to be almost one of those top eight teams. And, you can look at most of the divisions. You know who kind of the top two or three, you know, like we're in with Chicago, St. Louis. I know those teams. They're good. You know, they're Stanley Cup contending teams. They're in there, and then you got a group of another four or five, and that's where, you know, most teams are going to fit in. That's where we fit in, and that's where our battle for the playoffs is going to be.
When you see someone like Colorado take off the way they have, are you like, uh-oh, I wasn't expecting that. This is now all of a sudden there's somebody invited to the party I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, no, it's that's good for them. That's what teams need to do. You know, the other thing is, you know, every team's going to go through a tough time somewhere along the way. You know, you're either going to have a tough start, you're going to have a tough middle, or you have a tough ending. And so you have to be prepared for that. And it's a long season yet, but to getting off to a great start like Colorado's done is a great job by them. And they've, they've really kind of muddied the waters up in our division now. And it's the good thing is, you know, our division, you got to be a good team to make it. That's what you want to be. You want to be challenged. And we want to be one of the best. You got to be one of the best. That's the way it should be.
General managers meeting is coming up, I believe, Tuesday in New York City. What's top of mind with Jim Neal heading into this GM's meeting next week?
Well, first of all, you go in there for some league meetings. There's going to be some issues we're probably going to talk about. You know, there's been some rules that we've put in. I imagine there'll be discussion. You know, do we think the rules are working the right way? It's going to be probably disciplinary talk about, you know, some of the fighting and all these issues are going to come up. And then the second part of the meetings is it's a chance. You got to have all the GMs together. It's just what you talked about. We've had a chance to see our teams now. You know, do you have injuries? Don't you have injuries? So it's a chance to sit down and talk about players and potential moves. And we're all kind of in the rooms together. So I imagine things will heat up a little bit that way.
Do you think there's going to be much mind paid to the goalie fight thing? Or is that just something that kind of happens in the moment when something like the Emery thing goes down and then you don't necessarily have to start worrying about, you know, 10-game suspensions for leaving your own zone and stuff like that?
Yeah, I just think that's kind of an isolated situation. You know, it's something that we might, I could see maybe a rule getting tweaked, but that really doesn't happen a lot in the game anymore. It's an isolated situation, and I could see there might be a push to add some rule in there, to help. So the league kind of has a little bit more control of disciplinary actions in that, but I think there's other topics we'll be talking about more than just that one.
How often do you talk to your players? I mean, players that you think will end up representing their country at the Sochi Games. You played with Team Canada at the Winter Olympics in Lake Placid in 1980. I think you played on a line with Glenn Anderson as well. What do you talk to your players about as far as, you know, representing their countries, but still during the season keeping their focus on the NHL?
We keep in touch with them. Making sure, it's really the focus is on your team here, but. You're always pushing their condition level, make sure they're getting the right rest and looking after themselves. A lot of the players that are on that watch list, they have to watch themselves, what they're taking, as far as over-the-counter drugs, what they're eating and stuff. So they got to be kind of conscious of that. But really, it's just their conditioning level, staying healthy, and managing their their fitness level. That's probably the biggest thing to watch right now.
Can I ask you a follow-up to that, too? Because I don't think I've ever asked you about this. Your experience at Lake Placid, I mean, that was always, the Miracle on Ice and Herb Brooks and Ruggioni and Jim Craig and knocking off the Soviets. And what was your experience for that? And where were you for the game when the U.S. beat the Soviet Union?
Yeah, no, first of all, it's a great experience anytime you get to represent your country. But we were kind of the quiet ones of the group. We actually played Russia before the U.S. played them, and it ended up being, it was an empty net goal. We lined up losing 6-4. But it was a it was a great game, and I think that was a game that kind of showed that the Russians were, there was a few cracks in their armor. Because it was a game that could have gone either way, and that we gave them a good push in that. But, when you look back on it, it's amazing what history does. If the U.S. probably doesn't win that, I don't know if you have hockey in the U.S. like you do nowadays. That came at a time during the Cold War. The economy was bad in the U.S. Things were going bad in the U.S. And all of a sudden you had these young college players that come out of nowhere and rally the country. And I think that's probably the reason why there's hockey in Dallas now. There's hockey in Florida. There's hockey in California. Is a big part because in 1980, that was a rallying cry for the United States of America, and it kind of gave them something to grab on, and I really think that started the growth of hockey in the U.S., and if they didn't win, I don't know if hockey's as big as it is in the U.S. right now. So it was good.
Did you watch the game live? Where were you for that? I mean, it was the seventh day that U.S. had to go on and play Finland. But
compounds. We were in the, right. They had their athletes' compounds, so we're in there watching it. Matt, yes. Yeah.
Last one for me, Jim Nill. Couple of guys going into the Hall of Fame soon that I think you're somewhat familiar with. A little bit on Chris Chelios and Brendan Shanahan, if you please.
Well, I just saw Chris actually down at the Joe Louis here today, and two of the consummate pros. Chris Chelios, probably not the gifted guy that ever played the game, but he became one of the best all-time defensemen of all time. I think he's a great example for young people, what work ethic and never saying never is about. He just willed himself through everything, and just a classy character guy. I got a chance to work with him. He works with all our young kids down in Grand Rapids, and was with Detroit, and just a classy guy. I think he knows everybody in the world. You mentioned a name, whether it's Michael Jordan to Pearl Jam, he seems to know everybody. So he's an amazing guy that way. And then Brendan Shanahan, probably the ultimate power forward. A guy that could score goals. He could play any game you want. He's as tough as anybody there was. And I was very fortunate to be in Detroit with those type of players. And without them, I wouldn't have the rings that I would have won in Detroit.
And Jim, last one here, and we thank you very much for your time today. Big day for you, big day for the Dallas Stars in Detroit to face off against the Wings. As we know, all general managers have preferred trading partners, just someone you're comfortable with, you've done business with, you've worked with. Should we expect two old Medicine Hat Tigers to start looking to make deals together, yourself and Ken Holland?
Kenny and I talk all the time, and then we've already talked about a few deals and stuff. It's no secret they've got some, Kenny's got some cap issues coming up. He's had a lot of guys hurt, but now they're coming back healthy and that. So we keep in touch. We talk all the time. I got the utmost respect for Kenny. He's been kind of my mentor growing up, all through getting in the management side, and he's done a great job. So we talk all the time. Whether something happens, I don't know. But like I say, we're always talking, and it's made it probably a little bit easier now that we're in a different conference.
Yeah.
Thing is, if we ever, we're going to play our two games here in interleague play, and then after that, if we ever meet again, I know it's in the final, so it'd be a nice way to go.
I don't know how he would trust you or Yzerman. Yzerman goes and he takes Fiupola. All of a sudden, he's blowing up for the Lightning. I wouldn't trust either of you guys.
That's right. No, I think he's doing okay there. He's going to be just fine in Detroit, I think. Yep.
No tag days for Kenny. Jim, thanks so much for this. Good luck tonight. Have fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. You take care. Have a great day. Bye-bye.